The Sure Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Well, hello again, everyone. I'm Bill Cloud here, and we want to welcome you to our program, Returning to Our Roots. And last week, we began a series that we're calling Hear and Obey. And in this series, what we're trying to establish is the need for the people of God not only to hear what He says, but to actually do what He says. And so we are in the process of showing a pattern that He establishes in the very beginning for us in the book of Exodus, where He saves the children of Israel by the blood of a lamb. And those who placed their trust in the blood of the lamb were brought out of Egypt, delivered from their bondage. But as He brings them out of Egypt, He does not take them directly into the land of Canaan, but He actually causes them to turn and to go away that it would seem that not even Moses was aware of. Because as I shared with you in the previous program, Moses knows that he's to take the children of Israel to Mount Sinai. That's established for us when he encounters the burning bush. But the point was, he knew the way. But God tells them that they should turn in Exodus 14 and go a different way. But this different way is, to all human eyes anyway, is the wrong way. It's one that seems to be a trap. It's one that is going to pin them in. And so Pharaoh seizes the opportunity, at least that's the way he sees it, in their miscalculations or their wandering through the wilderness and going the wrong way, he sees an opportunity to have them penned in so that he can destroy them. And so we read in Exodus chapter 14, beginning in verse 9, "So the Egyptians pursued them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and overtook them camping by the sea beside Pi-Hahiroth, which again means mouth of the gorges, which was before Baal-Zephon. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord." So they're crying out to the Lord because, again, they're hemmed in. They can't go to the right. They can't go to the left. The sea is in front of them, and now Pharaoh's chariots are behind them. There's nowhere for them to run. And so to them, this looks like the end of the line. To Pharaoh, it looks like this is the end of the line for Israel. And it would seem that even though Moses is certain of deliverance, he's not really certain about what to do. Because look at this verse in Exodus 14, verse 15, says this, "And the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward." Think about that. You're on a beach. The sea is in front of you. You don't have any boats. You've just passed through a gorge, but that way is cut off now by Pharaoh's chariots. There is nowhere to go. And so the people are crying out. Moses is leading the people, and he's trying to listen to the voice of the Creator. And then the Creator says to him, "Quit crying out to me. Tell the people to go forward." What would you have thought? He's looking at an obstacle that human means, you know, has no power to do anything about. But you see, here's the point. When God told Moses to tell the people to turn, the Creator already knew what was going to happen. He knew that they were going to be on a beach. He knew that Pharaoh was going to pursue them. He knew that the people would think this is the end of the line. And so He orchestrated events. Why? To display His might and His power, and to prove not only to His enemies, but to prove to His people that He alone is God, that He alone is capable of deliverance, that He alone is the one who can, with the blast from His nostrils, open up the sea and cause them to pass away. You see, His thoughts are above our thoughts, and His ways are not our ways. You know, Isaiah 55 tells us about that. And if you think about your life as a believer, when you look back, when you first were born again, and perhaps you had an idea of how things were going to unfold, and I would be willing to bet you that what you thought was going to happen hasn't happened. And the way you thought things would unfold is not the way things have unfolded. He takes us down this path that we didn't expect to go. We encounter things that we didn't expect to encounter. But what He's trying to do is to see, who will hear what I say and who will do what I say in spite of the circumstances that are around them. Who will trust me? Who will trust in the blood of the Lamb? Who will trust in my hand to be able to deliver them in spite of what they may see going on in their lives? He takes us down a path that is many times troublesome. And it looks like the enemy is going to overtake us. But he, I would suggest to you, at times will orchestrate events so that he can display his mighty hand and his power in order to provoke in us trust, relying upon him. Now, I know that in my own life there have been times that I have questioned why God did this or why God didn't do that. There have been many times in my life when I have been fearful about the future. And I think most people, if you're honest with yourself, you would have to say you've done the same thing. Well, we're no different than those people of long ago. Because notice the people's reaction to everything that's going on right now in Exodus 14, beginning in verse 11. It says, "Then they said to Moses, 'Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, "Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians"? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." And Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord." And by the way, that word, their salvation, is Yeshua. "And see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever." And so, again, the people are fearful. They feel like they're in a trap and they can't get out. And they even complain, "Look, if you had just left us alone, we would have been better off just to be back in Egypt as slaves. At least we could have lived and not watched our children die." They're not really trusting at this point. They're fearful. And they're more fearful of Pharaoh than they are the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But Moses tells them, "These people that you fear, after today, you're not going to see them anymore." And so once again, what we see is the Creator saved them the same way that He saves you and I. That is, by the blood of the Lamb. But He also brought them through the sea in order to destroy their enemies. And all of this is a precursor of what the Messiah was going to accomplish, the Lamb of God who was slain for our sins and on our behalf. Not only did He deliver us and save us from our sins, but according to Colossians chapter 2, verse 15, He destroyed our enemies. He made an open show of them. This is the same thing that we see back in the book of Exodus. And so the Creator orchestrated these events, things that people didn't understand. How many of the Messiah's disciples really understood what was going on as it was happening? None of them. Peter wanted to stop it. And the Messiah refers to him as Satan. "Get behind me. You're mindful of the things of men, but not of the things of God." And so as the Creator's plan unfolds, it's very rare that people are in tune enough to observe and to understand what He's doing. And so then, it comes down to, are we willing to trust Him? That when we hear Him, "This is what I'm going to do," or "This is what I want you to do," do we trust Him enough to do it? Because you see, that is what trust, that's what faith is all about. Now, we also see that He orchestrated these events in order to instill within His people not just trust, but a godly fear. In Exodus 14, verse 21, we read this. "Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on the dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left." Now they had just come through a gorge where there were rock walls on their right hand and on their left hand. And they get to the end of that gorge. They haven't been able to turn to the right or to the left. They get to the end of the gorge. The sea is in front of them. Now Pharaoh's chariots are pursuing them, and they think they're going to die. But then God opens up that sea, and he causes the waters to be a wall to them on their right and on their left. And so, if you will, he brought them down the one and only path that leads to life. And for a certain part of the journey, they could see the walls and they could see the path that was in front of them. But it got to a certain point where they couldn't see the path anymore. Only the Creator could. Because none of them could have imagined that he was going to open up a sea and just extend the path. Or let me put it this way. None of them could have imagined that he was going to open the sea and reveal the path to them that up until that point, they had no idea where it was. And so it is with you and me. We walk this journey, and for a lot of it, you know, we can see the path in front of us. We can see where things are going. We can see the things around us. We can see the obstacles in front of us. But sometimes we get to a place we can't see where to go anymore. We don't know what the next step is. We don't know what's going to happen. Are we willing to continue to hear and to do, to trust and to obey in spite of what we see in front of us? Because the Creator, once again, he knew the path was there. It's just that the people didn't see it. And so what did he do? He revealed it to them. He just extended the path on through the sea. And so what the rocks in the gorge had served before, now the seas, as they stacked up in heaps, served. It's a wall to the right and to the left. They can't turn to the right and to the left. They have to keep going straight. But they're walking over on dry land. And so then this is when the Egyptians, which this is amazing to me. I mean, you would think that if you saw their God open up the waters for them so that they could pass through on dry land, that's when I would have turned around and gone home. But, you see, the Creator had determined that because Pharaoh had been unwilling to let his children go, his son, and because Pharaoh would always in his heart believe that Israel belonged to him, you see, Pharaoh had to go. There couldn't be anyone that they feared more than the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so the Egyptians pursued them into the sea and were destroyed. And so we read in Exodus chapter 14, beginning at verse 30. So the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believe the Lord and His servant Moses. And so they see these people who had been their taskmasters, they see these people who had been their lords, they see them dead on the seashore, washed up by the waters that had delivered them. And so this caused them to fear the Creator more than they did the Egyptians. The Creator is a jealous God. He doesn't want us fearing circumstances, others, political powers, military forces. He doesn't want us fearing the adversary more than we are to fear him. Because you see, others may have the ability to destroy our bodies, but the Creator has the authority, after he's destroyed the body, to throw it and our soul into hell, it says. So we are to fear him. Not in the sense that we believe that if we make a mistake, the lightning bolt's going to come out of the heavens and strike us down. That's not the point. No, we fear him with a respect and an awe, knowing that he is more powerful. He is all powerful. He is over every king, every lord, every despot, every tyrant. He is over all. And so we are to fear him. And so it says that they believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Now, something that we need to point out about this passage through the sea, and that is this, that according to the text, when God divided the waters and stacked them up in heaps, the waters actually congealed. Let me read it for you in Exodus 15, verse 8. With the blast of your nostrils, the waters were gathered together. The floods stood upright like a heap, and the depths congealed in the heart of the sea. Now, what that says to me is that when his breath or the wind from his nostrils divided the sea, it either caused the waters to turn into some gelatin-like state, or, and this is the way some commentators believe, ice. In other words, he transformed the liquid into another state, either gelatin or ice. That would be pretty impressive. And so he caused them to stack up like walls so that the children of Israel could pass through the sea. And so here's why I'm bringing this out. If you had seen waters, a sea, an ocean divided in two, stacked up in heaps, and then the waters turning into gelatin or ice or something like that, and you pass through that, and then as your enemy pursues you through that, and you see that as soon as you're delivered, those waters come back and the seas return to their place and destroy all your enemies, you would think that after witnessing something like that, that you would never grumble, bellyache, and complain again. But the reality is this. After coming through the sea, and after rejoicing, and after celebrating, and after praising God, and believing Him, and in His servant Moses, it was only 3 days later, according to Exodus 15, that these people were grumbling and complaining again. You see, hearing Him and obeying Him, hearing and doing, is exemplifying that we trust Him. When we hear Him and then we do what He says, it is manifesting the fact that maybe I don't understand what I'm doing or why I'm doing it, but I trust You, and You're not going to tell me to do something that's wrong. You're not going to tell me to do something that's harmful. You're only going to ask me to do what's beneficial for me, because your attributes and your characteristics, what we see in the Exodus and the Passover, is only for my good. Your will is to deliver me. Your will is to bring me closer to You. And so why would You tell me to do something that wasn't good for me? And so hearing and doing is a matter of trust. And if after witnessing this crossing at the sea and the waters being congealed, and then only 3 days later not trusting Him for water, you see, the children of Israel are painting a picture for us as well. And that is what not to do, to learn from their mistakes. Now, they're not only going to be complaining about water, but they're going to be complaining about food. They're going to be complaining about bread, meat, and all these different things. And so He brings them to the mountain because He's going to display His might and His power once again, because He wants to instill in them that I alone am the Lord, I alone can deliver you, and I can provide for all your needs. So learn to hear what I say, learn to do what I say, as a manifestation of the fact that you trust me, that you really believe me. So He brings them through the sea, and He brings them into the wilderness. Now the word wilderness in Hebrew is midbar. I want to show that to you here. It's spelled mem, dalet, bet, resh. Midbar, wilderness, desert. But here's something very interesting. Those same four letters, mem, dalet, bet, resh, that mean desert or wilderness, can also be pronounced midaber. Midaber is the Hebrew phrase that means to speak. So what's the point? He brought them into the midbar, the desert, in order to midaber, to speak to them. So why does He bring His people into the wilderness? Well, you look throughout Scripture, there's a lot of people that He brought into the wilderness in order to speak to them. Well, Israel, Moses, Elijah, David, Paul, the Messiah Himself. All of these people went into the desert. They went into the wilderness. They went into the midbar in order that the Creator might midbar, that He might speak to them. And so you might ask, okay, so why does He bring us into the wilderness to speak to us? Because if you think about it, in the wilderness, number one, there are not a lot of distractions. There are no 7-Elevens, there are no sports authorities, there are no nail salons, there are no sporting events. There are none of these things that you and I have to deal with every day. All of these distractions, all of the hustle and bustle, none of those things were there. It was just a desert. And so He brought them into a place where there weren't all these distractions. But now, in place of those typical distractions that they would have had in Egypt, here's what we do have. We do have rock, sand, dust, heat, wind, snakes, scorpions, jackals, all these things that are not appealing, all these things that are, well, in some cases, even frightful. So he brings us into that environment. Why? Because he wants to speak to us. Let me put it this way. He wants to create an environment where he's going to have our undivided attention. He wants us to hear what he has to say. But he wants us to hear in order that we may do what he says. So now we're going to look at how Israel responds to this, how they respond to his voice in the wilderness. And so we're going to go to Exodus chapter 19, beginning at verse 3. And here's what the Creator says. Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice, and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. And so he says to them, and I'm going to paraphrase this. Look, you saw how I saved you. You saw how I saved you out of Egypt, how I delivered you by the blood of the Lamb. That's exactly how he saves you and me. So he's reminding them of this. Then, after I saved you by the blood of the Lamb, I destroyed your enemies. The adversary is destroyed. He no longer has any power over you. So they're already saved, is the point. They've already been redeemed, if I can put it that way, by the blood of a Lamb. But now that they're redeemed, here's what he says. Here's how I want you to live. So, if you will indeed hear my voice, and if you will keep my covenant, or let's put it this way, if you'll hear what I say and then do what I say, here's what the result will be. Then you will be a kingdom of priests. Then you will be a holy nation. Then you will be a peculiar treasure and to be above all peoples, for all the earth is mine. In other words, to attain this kingdom of priests status, to be considered a peculiar treasure, to be this holy nation. And in Hebrew, it's goy kadosh. Kadosh is the Hebrew word that means holy or set apart. But in order to attain that status, it's predicated upon this. If you hear my voice, if you keep my covenant, you're already saved. You've already been delivered by the blood of the Lamb. That's already established. That has allowed you to come out of Egyptian bondage. That has allowed you to come out of the slavery of sin. That's how you are able to draw near unto me. But now that I've saved you, here's how you're to live. There's a way that you're to walk. There's a path that you're supposed to journey. And so, if you hear what I say, and if you do what I say, that's how you're going to be the set-apart nation. That's how you're going to be a kingdom of priests. It has nothing to do at this point with whether they were saved or how they get saved. They're already saved. And once again, how? Because they trusted in the blood of a Lamb. But once you trust in the blood of the Lamb, there is a way that we are to live. There is a path that we are to walk. And it's the one and only path that leads to life. And I don't get to pick and choose how that path looks. I don't get to determine the path. The denominations don't determine the path. The Pope doesn't determine the path. The Father of all and the Creator of all is the one who determines that path. And so when we are born again by the blood of the Lamb, when we have seen our enemy destroyed, the one who held us captive, that is the adversary, here's what the Creator says to you and me, just as surely as he said it to the children of Israel 3,500 years ago. You want to be a kingdom of priests? You want to be a holy nation? You want to be a peculiar treasure? Then hear my voice. And when you hear my voice, do what I ask you to do. Walk the one and only path that leads to life. Keep my words. Keep my instructions. Keep my commandments. Because that exemplifies, not only are you my people, not only are you witnessing that to others, but you are telling me, I trust you. We're going to have more on this next week. I hope you'll join me. Until then, I'm Bill Cloud. Shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a Bill Cloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.